Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 150, Smorgasbord, January 2020. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I'm Roger, your host, and this is the podcast that's all about home cooking, getting in the kitchen, having fun, learning new things, all that stuff that this show is totally all about. And I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you found me. I know a lot of you have been with me for quite a while. I'm glad you've stuck with me all these years and 150 episodes, which is crazy. And welcome to all the new folks that are listening. I know just from what I see in the Facebook group, we have new people trickling in all the time. And I know we have a lot of new listeners out there also that aren't part of the Facebook group that are joining to listen to episodes when I release them. So welcome. Really, really glad you're here. It means a lot that you want to be a part of our fun little community here at the Kitchen Counter. This is a smorgasbord episode, which means I'll be covering a variety of topics. Because it is episode 150, it's kind of a nice, interesting number. So I might spend a little bit of time talking about the show in general, maybe a little historical perspective, some things to look forward for to in the future regarding the show. I've also got a handful of questions and feedback from folks out in listener land that I'm going to go over in this episode as well. I'll do that in the second half of the show. Before we get started into anything, though, of course, I want to remind you that you can always reach out to me via email over at feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com, or you can find the private Facebook group for the Kitchen Counter. It's called the Kitchen Counter Coffee Break over at the easiest way to find it is just kitchencounterpodcast.com/group. And then for this particular episode, anything I mention that I say I'm going to link to or whatever in the show notes, you can find over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/150. That's just 150. That'll get you to the show notes for this episode. So if I do mention something, I'll try to put the links there. So yeah, episode 150, kind of a milestone, I guess. If I was more regular and I cranked out a lot more content, I'd probably should be double that, really, because I think I started the show back in 2014, I think the fall of 2014. I'm not actually looking at my old episode list. I should do that. But yeah, 2014, I think it was, I want to say August or September time frame, something like that. Yeah, it's so weird to think that I've been doing this for 5.5 years, almost 6 years. That's crazy. It's really also weird to say 2020. Has anyone else found that weird? Would you say 2020, 2020? Either way, I remember being a kid and like I couldn't even comprehend that this year would ever come. I know for some of you younger folks, that probably doesn't make any sense. But for us kids that have been around the block a couple of times, it just seemed like so far in the future. But here we are. Anyway, here we are, yes, and I'm so glad you're here with me to enjoy this. One of the first things I want to touch on in this episode, in this kind of potpourri of topics, is I want to just kind of talk for a few minutes about what this show is all about. And I know for a lot of longtime listeners, this will probably be sort of a rehash or something you already know, but I think it's good to kind of reiterate, especially for new listeners who maybe don't go clear back to episode one to listen to me explain what this show is all about. And heck, even if you do, and I know a lot of you do, bless your hearts, I can't even remember what I said back in episode one. And quite frankly, I'm not going to go back and listen to myself because I can't stand doing that. So I'm just going to kind of reiterate what I think I might have said back then, or maybe how I feel now and what this show is about. And I think it'll all make sense, I hope. So when I launched this show back in 2014, there weren't really many home cooking focused podcasts, at least on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. I couldn't find many. There was several food podcasts, and there were several podcasts that were put out there by chefs or food personalities or food media, like I don't know if Bon Appetit was around back then, but stuff like that, right? America's Test Kitchen, whose amazing podcast has unfortunately gone away, but is kind of still around in spirit in the Milk Street Kitchen podcast. But anyway, I wanted to do this podcast. Really, it's a hobby of mine. It's for fun, as a way to just talk about home cooking because it's one of the things I'm passionate about. It's one of the things I'm fairly good at. And actually, towards the end of the show, I'm going to be addressing a listener question. I'm going to be talking about one question, but I get quite a few of them, believe it or not, where people want to know more about me. And I don't talk about myself or my life or my family all that much on the podcast, probably for no other reason than, well, maybe I don't think you'd find it that interesting. And B, I am kind of a fairly private person, so it's just kind of weird to talk about myself. I'm not kind of like that self-promoter type of a person. Not that there's anything wrong with that personality, but that's just not me. But enough of you ask. So at the end of the show, or towards the end of the show, one of the last questions I'll address is that. So if you're interested in that, stick around and listen to it. Otherwise, you know, if you've gotten to that question, you've heard all the food-related topics, and you can jump off, and I will not be offended at all. So anyway, this show is all about home cooking. And if, you know, I don't have a real solid rhyme or reason about how the show is constructed or the topics I choose or the people I interview, other than it needs to have a home cooking angle, right? It needs to add some value and hopefully teach you something that you can put to use in your own kitchen or somehow in your own cooking. And it needs to be non-pitchy or preachy. And by non-preachy, every once in a while, I can get a little preachy, I'll admit it. But I really try to keep it in check. And what I mean by that is I don't really care what you want to eat or think you should eat or like to eat or cook, for that matter. I just want to help you get better at it and have more fun doing it and learn some more skills around whatever it is you want to cook so you can be successful. You'll never, almost never, hear me talk about fad diets or nutritional information or you know, anything like that in my show. This is not a lifestyle health show. This is a home cooking show. So if you want to cook, you know, vegan and low fat or gluten free or bacon full, or you're a cake master and you just want to bake cakes all the time, I say go for all of the above, and hopefully you'll find something in these episodes that will help you out. And then one slightly related thing I just want you all to know is, unlike a lot of shows out there, you've never heard sponsorships or advertising on the show. Occasionally, I may have a guest that has a product, and then, of course, we'll talk about that on the show. But I'm not you know, running ads or doing anything like that. I really don't make any money off of the show, and I don't really intend to. And I hope by taking that approach, we can just kind of keep this low-key and informal and friendly, and you don't have to worry about me selling you anything. And yeah, so occasionally if you click on a link in my show notes, it goes to like an Amazon page. And if you buy something, I'll make a few cents, like literally a few cents. But I just kind of do that to help keep the lights on, if you know what I mean. Okay, enough of all that. Welcome to the new folks. Thanks to the folks who have been around for a while. You know, I love each and every one of you, and I love getting to interact with you. And even though this is a hobby and it's not my day job, and sometimes I have trouble finding time to get episodes out, I really, really appreciate when you, you know, find value and tell me about it in the episodes that you listen to. Okay, so here's to 150 more episodes. All right, I was looking back into 2019's episodes, and darn, I didn't write it down here, but I think I released 24 or 25 episodes. I average a couple episodes a month. Some months I only maybe put out one. Other months I'll put out more than two. But I wanted to look and see what topics or what episodes kind of floated to the top as far as popularity. And I just wanted to share that with you really quickly because I thought it was kind of an interesting thing to look at. So I'll share my top five episodes. And these were strictly based on how many downloads the episode got in the 2019 calendar year. So keep in mind, episodes that may have been released right at the end of the year may not have had as much time to accumulate downloads, right? So, but what's interesting is that are the dates here are pretty spread out. I've got a February, a May, a January, an August, and a July. So they're kind of all over the place as far as when I release these episodes in 2019. My most popular episode last year, this actually surprised me a little bit, although it shouldn't because a lot of you ask about this all the time, and that is the episode that's improvising in the kitchen. I'll put links to all these episodes, by the way, in the show notes over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/150. So don't feel like you have to write these down. You can just head over there and take a look. But yeah, the improvising in the kitchen episode was by far the most popular episode last year. It was followed up in second place by one of my Let's Cook episodes. So those are the episodes I started doing last year where I actually cook something live on the air, or recorded at least, from beginning to end. I cook it and talk through it. So by the end of the episode, I've actually completed the dish. And that was my Let's Cook Creamy Mac and Cheese. That was the second most popular episode last year. Episode number three was the recipe management episode. That was a really interesting episode where Julie Awad came on and talked about an app she and her son, I believe it was, developed called Saffron, which is sort of an app that allows you to, it's like a digital cookbook, basically, where you can put your recipes and manage your own recipes and have them sort of at your fingertips. A very popular episode. And I know a lot of you have gone on to use Saffron, and I think from what I've seen, you're loving it. So that's pretty cool. Number four was another one of my Let's Cook episodes, and that was the shakshuka episode. So that's interesting to me. Out of the couple dozen episodes I put out, I think I only put out five or six Let's Cook episodes, and two of them are in the top five. And I get a lot of feedback from you that you like those live cooking episodes. So that's pretty cool. And then rounding out the top five was my intro to air fryers episode, which, again, I just spent a little time talking about air fryers, which were kind of all the rage in 2019, and kind of what I thought about them and how they worked and that sort of stuff. And again, I got some really good feedback from listeners about what they found useful or didn't find useful about that particular episode. So I thought that was interesting because they kind of mimic or they kind of match some of the plans I have for the show for 2020. And I'm going to talk about that next because, well, I want you to know what to expect. And I kind of want to talk this out and get feedback from you all, either via email or whatever, if you have ideas or thoughts on kind of what I want to talk about. So first and foremost, what I'm planning for 2020 is I'm going to do more of the live cooking episodes, or the Let's Cook episodes, I'm calling them. So I've gotten a lot of feedback from folks. They really, really like those episodes. They like trying the recipes that I share in those episodes in particular. So I will definitely do more Let's Cook episodes. I'm going to try to do one a month, in addition to other kinds of content. So you can definitely look forward to that. I might cheat on the format a little bit. I've been doing it where it's beginning to end. Everything is cooked and done. I want to try some recipes that have a little inactive time. And in fact, I did one like that towards the end of the year with the potatoes au gratin, where I put them in the oven and then I just edited all that kind of inactive time out because you wouldn't want to sit and listen to me, I don't know, play Yahtzee on my iPhone for 45 minutes. Now, of course, I wouldn't do that. It'd be much more productive. But yeah, so I'm going to do more recipes that maybe have a little bit more editing. But as far as the active cooking, that will all be live recorded, so I can talk through that. And I know some of you have asked me why I'm not doing videos. And while the Let's Cook episodes would be great material for videos, to be quite frank with you, I just don't have the bandwidth to deal with video. It's just a lot more work, a lot more editing bandwidth needed to do video. And I just don't have the time to do that. If I did that, I'd probably turn out even fewer audio podcast episodes. And I don't want to do that. Another type of episode I want to do more of in 2020 would be similar to the one I just released earlier this month on the Instant Pot, where I took five items and I talked about five tasks, basically, that your Instant Pot really excels at doing. And this is sort of in that intro to air fryers kind of idea. I want to do more appliance or technique or ingredient-based episodes where it's just really hyper-focused on whatever that particular tool is, or the technique, or the ingredient, and just give nothing but really good, actionable, usable tips and advice. And those episodes will probably be a little bit on the shorter side, not short like 5 or 10 minutes, but short like 20 minutes. And I'm going to try to do one of those a month as well. So I'm going to be doing more of those sort of shorter, more frequent episodes on specific appliances or techniques or ingredients. Last year, you probably recall my brother and I went to New Orleans, and I had really ambitious plans for the podcast in New Orleans, but being that it was New Orleans, believe it or not, I didn't end up with a lot of free time to do a lot of recording, but we did produce an episode where we talked about our experiences there, and we're actually discussing perhaps another trip this year to a different location, and I'll probably do something similar with the podcast in that location, and we're thinking, now this isn't set in stone, so don't hold me to this. In fact, we're just at the very preliminary planning stage. And we're thinking a Nashville and or Memphis trip. So we'll probably be doing some food-related content if we do make it out to Nashville and Memphis this year. So that'll be fun. You can look forward to that. And if you're familiar with the area, I've never been to either place, nor has my brother. If you live there or are familiar with the area, please get in touch with me and let me know what we absolutely can't miss when it comes to stuffing good food and or tasty libations into our mouth. So that would be great. And that'll be something we'll cover in the show this year. So I've got a lot of plans for the podcast, as I always do at the beginning of the year, and we'll see how that all shakes out with time and things like that. But I'm really looking forward to, like I mentioned, doing more of the Let's Cook episodes for one, and just having some more targeted content. I'm still going to do interviews and things like that, but you know, I've never really found my sweet spot with interviews. You know, it's not like I'm a famous chef or food personality, and so it's not like I'm really getting famous chefs on the show. Not that I even think you would want that. I think it's much more interesting to get some, you know, less heard voices on the show, maybe a more diverse set of voices, topics that you wouldn't, you know, probably see on the Food Network or whatever. Although, that being said, if you're a famous person and you do listen to the show and you do want to come on the show, please, by all means, send me an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com and we'll see what we can do. Yeah, so interviews will still be an occasional part of the show, but you know, unlike some shows, podcasts out there, it's not going to become sort of the backbone of the content. So that's what to expect from the show. If you have anything really specific you want out of the show, or you have questions or topic ideas, definitely send me an email and I will consider everything that comes in. I really do appreciate it. And again, if you're in the Facebook group, that's a great place to interact and offer feedback and things like that as well. So let's jump into some questions and feedback for this portion of the Smorgasbord January 2020 episode. All right, I've got a handful of these, and a couple of these are kind of old, so I really apologize for not getting to these sooner, but, you know, November and December are kind of wonky months, right, with all the holidays. That's the excuse I'm using. This isn't a question, this is just some feedback, but I thought I'd share it because she includes the makings of a healthy little cake recipe in here I wanted to share. This is from Sally from Saddlebrook, Arizona. Sally says, "Hi, I'm so glad I found your podcast. I was looking on iTunes for podcasts about using instant pots and found your podcast. I listen at night while going to sleep because I'm very sensitive to voices and you have a beautiful soft voice." Oh, thank you, Sally. "Some other podcasts I've listened to wake me up with a jolt because of commercial messages, horrible music, or an annoying voice." I'm batting 1,000 here. "Okay. Cooking is my passion, as well as gardening and painting landscapes of the Arizona desert where I live. I'm an extremely health conscious cook. And if I do make a dessert," here's your note, get your notepads out, "I use a little stevia. Lately, I've been making a cake with a whole can of pumpkin, cranberries that I cook in the instant pot. I use a little stevia, lots of spices, including turmeric, cinnamon, cloves, nutmeg, 2 eggs, 1/3 cup of canola oil, and walnuts on top. It's so healthy and moist." All right. Thank you so much for that, Sally. I really appreciate you taking the time to write. The Arizona desert sounds mighty nice in the middle of January up here in the Pacific Northwest. So I hope you're enjoying the non-wet and cold weather that you likely don't have. All right, let's see. Here's one. This is an interesting one. I want to talk about this because I get a fair amount of opinions and feedback about this topic. And this particular bit of feedback is just the latest I've gotten on this topic. So apologies to the others who have brought it up in the past that I haven't mentioned on the show, but in spirit, I know you're all here. And this is from Nick G. I will abbreviate. He found my podcast, I guess it's probably been a couple of months ago now. And he likes my Let's Cook Macaroni and Cheese recipe. So that's good. Enjoys listening to it. But this is interesting. He felt a bit attacked when I covered an episode on the topic of meal delivery kits. And this is Nick. I wasn't going to say anything, but then in the first episode of 2018, you also covered it. And I still felt you had a negative outlook on them. And remember what he means by meal delivery kits are like Blue Apron or HelloFresh or I don't even know what the other ones are called. But yeah, those things. I know you get tons of feedback already, but I felt like this was a good time to say hello and tell you my anecdotal story. Back in 2018, I was living with my girlfriend at the time, and we received a coupon for one of the meal delivery services, so we tried it out. Our first box came, and we were excited to try the meals because they had dishes we'd never tried and contained some things that I normally didn't favor too much. One of the dishes was a Southwest chicken with roasted sweet potatoes and bell peppers, and then sprinkled feta cheese and lime juice. Now, I wasn't a fan of sweet potato, but the dish was amazing. I was an amateur home cook at the time and had a lot of go-to recipes, but the dish just clicked my brain in all the right ways. It told me that although I had never liked something, I just needed to try it cooked differently. How flavor profile contrast is a big deal. We had one more box after that one, and then we canceled the subscription. And then he goes on to say he would consider those two boxes to be a huge milestone in his cooking journey. And he understands they were costly and even cheating, but in the end, they opened my eyes and even my girlfriend's eyes, who never liked to cook, all the different things we could be making. Yeah. And, you know, my thinking has evolved on this, Nick, and a little bit anyway. And quite frankly, I know I've talked about it a couple of times, and I'll try to dig up the episode links to put them in the show notes in case anyone wants to go back and listen to what I actually did say. So you can email me later and say, Roger, what you just said in this episode isn't exactly what you said before. But here's kind of my stance on meal delivery kits now. I'm still not a super huge fan of them. And I think I'm pretty sure I said in the past that, first things first, I'm a bit hypocritical because I've never actually used one. Okay, so let's just get that out in the open. So I think I've said in the past that I don't doubt that their ingredients are great and their recipes are great. And, you know, what they provide to you is a great package deal. It might be a little bit costly, but I mean, it's just, I know what they're giving you is probably quality stuff, right? Or there's no way they could stay in business. But I had some reservations about just the idea of, you know, prepackaged ingredients and recipes and meals and things like that. Just kind of what it does to the tradition of home cooking, I guess, if I were to just to sum it up in one sentence, that's how I would put it without rehashing the whole topic. And I got some feedback at the time from some folks that they agreed with me. And then I got feedback from others that were right along in line with what Nick says here, where, yeah, they're expensive and maybe they're kind of weird if you think about it, but they're kind of amazing and they do kind of help you explore foods and cuisines and recipes that maybe you would ordinarily not try. And so that's in and of itself, perhaps a good thing. Nick also sent me a follow-up email, by the way, and he makes a good point where he said, because he talked with his friends about this very topic, and he said his friends that come from big cooking families or had, you know, kind of cooking in their life history, their childhood or whatever, didn't really care for the meal delivery services. But himself and his friends that didn't come from cooking backgrounds actually like them and maybe have used them in the past, you know, to varying degrees of frequency. So I totally understand, Nick, what you're saying. And in the way my thinking has evolved is, and this goes along with what I said at the top of the episode, right? I don't really care what you cook. I just want you to get better at cooking it. And if using a meal delivery service to help you explore ingredients and techniques and cuisines and flavor profiles and things like that ultimately serves you by expanding your repertoire of techniques and understanding of flavors and love of food that you may not try on your own, then I think in the long run, that's a positive thing. I don't know what else to say. I think that's how my thinking has evolved in it. So now, the other thing I will mention, though, so I can cross the being a hypocrite thing off my list, is I do plan for realsies this time. I am going to get a couple of meal delivery kit boxes and try them out just so I can say I've had the full experience. And I might even do like a live cooking meal kit delivery episode where I do like an unboxing, of the kit that comes and then unbox it and cook it from beginning to end, perhaps. And we'll see how that goes. So I do plan on doing that for 2020. And Nick, thank you so much for the email. I really do appreciate when you guys call me on stuff because, you got to do that. I'm not infallible and I'm not the final authority on pretty much anything that comes out of my mouth. So yeah, shoot me an email whenever you have questions or want to call me on something. I'm happy to entertain those. So thanks, Nick. And thanks for everyone else who's commented on the meal delivery kit stuff in the past. All right, let's see. Here's a question. This is short and sweet. This is from Jeff McDaniel. He says, Roger, do you find value in making fresh pasta? I'm so glad you asked that, Jeff. Not least of which, because next month in February, I'm actually planning some content around making fresh pasta. I'm not sure exactly if that'll be a Let's Cook episode or what, but yeah, I'm going to cover that in a little more detail next month. But this is a very interesting question because I'm going to take the do you find value as sort of the royal you as a home cook, but I'll answer it from my perspective. You know, as a home cook, you're usually trying to get to certain outcomes, and the kind of outcomes you get depends a lot on what you put into it, right? So how much time are you willing to invest in your home cooking? How much money are you willing to put into it? How much effort are you willing to invest in learning how to do things a certain way? What kind of outcomes are you looking for as far as the quality of the food you're making? You know, is convenience more important than cost? Which is that more important than quality? So there's all these factors that go into it. So when you ask a question like, do you find value in making fresh pasta? There's so many different ways you can approach a question like that. So the short answer for me is, yes, I do find value in making fresh pasta. But on the other side of that coin, I find a lot of value in using pre-made pasta. And, you know, there's totally nothing wrong with that. It just, again, depends on kind of what your value proposition for yourself and your family and your home and your own home cooking situation, right? I don't make fresh pasta really often. But when I do make it, what I find, you know, where the value comes into it for me is less about, how do I put this? It's less about, like, for example, I love to make egg noodles. My mom used to make egg noodles all the time, right? Fresh egg noodles. And it'd be super easy for me to run to the store and pay like a buck and get a big old bag of those, you know, egg noodles. And I do that, and those are great, and they work fine for soups and casseroles and all that kind of stuff. And most of the time, I'm perfectly happy with that. But there's something about the process and the act of making fresh egg noodles. So for me, you know, the value in that is the process. And the other part of the big value proposition for me when I make egg noodles, for that one specific example, is sort of the connection to my mom, right? So, I learned how to make egg noodles from her. So when I make egg noodles, I feel like I'm keeping sort of a connection to her alive in the way I'm cooking. And I feel that way about other things that I make in the kitchen as well, for whether it's my mom or my dad or whatever. So that's one way to look at the value question. If this was a strictly financial value question, I would say it's super cheap to make fresh pasta. I mean, it's flour and water and salt and maybe eggs. I mean, those are not big investments to make a lot of pasta. You're right, you can really crank out a lot of pasta with a little bit of all that stuff. But on the other hand, dried pasta in the store is pretty dang cheap. I mean, you can get a pretty big box of spaghetti or macaroni noodles or a fettuccine for like a dollar, right? I mean, or whatever. So that's another way to look at it. Of course, making fresh pasta takes some time, right? So that's another value question. Anyway, so it's a hard question to answer, Jeff, but if you're asking because you're curious if you should take the time to learn how to make fresh pasta, I think you totally should if it's something that you're even remotely interested in, because it's fun and it's delicious. And you may not do it all the time, but when you do it, I think you will find it very rewarding, especially if you're serving it to other folks, because it's pretty impressive when you tell them that you made fresh pasta. So, but yeah, I'm going to be doing some pasta-related content next month. So if you have a follow-up question, Jeff, please send me an email, and I'm happy to answer that. But thank you for sending that in. Hopefully those thoughts made sense. Okay, let's see. All right, this one is from Christopher. This one just came in a day or two ago. He says, "Hi, Roger. I'm really appreciating your podcast. I had two thoughts about topics I'd love to hear more about." Okay. I haven't really read through this one yet, so I don't know if I can answer these on the fly. One, I do veggie, shrimp, and chicken stir fry so frequently for my family and would love to hear some tips about how to up my stir fry game or simply how to add some variety or novelty to them, especially without adding sodium, which leads me to my next question. Okay, Christopher's on a sodium restriction, so he doesn't use table salt, and he doesn't like most salt substitutes. Could you talk about other ways or spices that function to make food taste saltier without adding too much, if any, sodium? Okay, these are really good questions. I'll probably think on these a little bit more, but I'll do my best to give you some quick answers here, Christopher. So number one, the whole stir fry game, it is so stinking easy to fall into a stir fry rut. And I think one of the big reasons, I think there's two reasons, right? You're comfortable with a certain set of ingredients, you know how to stir fry them, right? Okay, the shrimp and the chicken, the snap peas and the broccoli, got all that. I know how to deal with that. Why would I want to add anything else, right? It's just complicated and you don't have time. That's one way you fall into the stir fry rut. And then I think the other way you fall into the stir fry rut is, and it's a reasonable thing to do, is you think stir fry, you equate that with Asian cuisine, and then you kind of box yourself in and say, like, well, for stir fry, it's got to be kind of an Asian flavor palette, Asian sort of ingredients, right? I mean, it's a stir fry. So the first thing that pops in my mind for your first question, like how to up your stir fry game and how to break out of the box, is I would go totally nuts and think about non stir fry related cuisine. So get out of Asia and think, like, what could I adapt and turn into a stir fry from other cuisines? Like, for example, the American Southwest. I mean, what kind of Southwest flavors and ingredients could you turn into kind of a cool stir fry? You know, you stir fry it like you would any Asian dish, but using a different flavor palette, different ingredients. I think that would be kind of interesting. So something like maybe some Anaheim peppers and some roasted tomatoes and maybe marinated flank steak, maybe some tomatillos or something. I don't know. And, you know, how could you turn that into a stir fry? I mean, that's just one example, but you could take any cuisine or any region, and I bet you could find lots of things that you could sort of deconstruct into a stir fry, because right, all stir fry is a hot pan and some ingredients cooked quickly together. So every cuisine's got candidates for that. So food for thought. I mean, that's just like my gut reaction to that. I can't think on my feet fast enough tonight to give you other specific examples, but that's something I would think about. And then as far as the salt substitutes, a couple of specific things come to mind. One would be, you know, if you're thinking of your flavors, you know, salty, sweet, sour, bitter, and umami, the kind of the five typical flavors, remember that salty is something that counteracts bitterness. Some people associate salty kind of against sweetness, but salty actually complements sweetness. So if you're looking for ways to combat bitter, which is what salty does, and can really enhance your food, is look at acid. And a great source of that, of course, is citrus. So lemon juice is a great salt substitute as far as seasoning goes, right? Chemically, it's not going to work exactly the same as sodium. But But from a flavor perspective, it works quite similarly. So using lemon juice is really a great way to brighten your flavors, to heighten the flavors, to clarify flavors even in ways sometimes that salt does. Vinegar can also do that too, sort of a mild vinegar. Stay away from the flavored vinegars because those are usually sodium packed, but most pure vinegars like apple cider or white vinegar, or even wine vinegars typically don't have any sodium in them. But, you know, of course, you would check the label on that. So those are ways you can do that. Another way you can kind of up the flavor profile of your dishes is with, you know, non-sodium spices. One of my favorite finishing spices, and again, this kind of falls in the tart end of the spectrum. Tart is another good way to kind of brighten up your dishes, is sumac. So check out powdered sumac if you haven't ever tried that. It's got a really kind of a mild lemony, mild cranberry-ish tartness flavor to it. And that's a wonderful spice. It's one of my favorite spices now. And it can go a long way to making your food a little more flavorful without adding salt. So a couple of ideas there, but this gives me some ideas that there's some content I could certainly build around talking about both of these questions, stir frying and spice substitutes and salt substitutes and things like that. So Christopher, thank you for the questions. I hope that gives you a little bit to start with, though. Couple more here. This one just came in as well. This is a new listener and a new member of the Facebook group, I believe. Hello, my name is Caitlin Kiefer. I've been listening to your podcast for about a month and a half. Oh, yeah, and also a recent member of the Facebook group. I just want to say thank you for all you do. You're obsessed with the podcast and have been learning so much from it. Thank you, Caitlin. That's very sweet. She says, I'm a meat scientist from The Ohio State University. I have all things meat and grilling down, but I just started to get into home cooking about a year ago and loving every minute of it. I listen to your podcast every day at work between meetings. I work as a food scientist, so there are many meetings, and absolutely love it. I'm always taking notes and writing down recipes I do on the show. Thanks that you do on the show. Thanks again for putting out a great podcast, Caitlin Kiefer. Thank you, Caitlin. That's very nice. I'm so glad you found the show and you're part of the Facebook group. I'm sure you're finding it a cool resource, and there's a lot of really neat people in there that interact a lot, sharing recipes and pictures and advice. So welcome. All right, here's the last one for today. And this is the one I mentioned is going to be a little bit Roger-centric. So if that ain't your bag, you can duck out now. Otherwise, listen on. So this one comes from Karina Larson. And she says, and this is kind of an old one, so Karina, I'm sorry it took me so long. Hi, Roger. I recently found your podcast, and I absolutely love it. I'm going back and listening to every episode from the beginning. Oh, man, I can't believe people do that. I love it. Don't get me wrong. Okay, she continues. I totally fangirled when you mentioned that your parents are from South Dakota because I'm from there as well. I could definitely relate to your comment about meat and potatoes consisting of just about every supper growing up. I've since expanded my own cooking repertoire to include more exotic dishes, but I do love some good old-fashioned Midwestern cooking. And she says, thoughts on hot dishes / casseroles? Yeah, I've got lots of thoughts on them. And that's a topic for an episode. Short story is, who doesn't love hot dishes and casseroles? All right. Like I said, I'm way back in the 2015 archive, so I apologize if this question is addressed in a later episode. I guess I was just wanting to know a little more about you. For instance, it would be interesting to know what you do for a living, how you came to love home cooking, and how you grew your knowledge. I understand if you prefer not to share and keep the podcast focused on the food, but I'm always just the curious type. Thanks for making an awesome show, Rena. Okay, Rena. I will call you Rena. All right, so who the heck am I? I know some of you know me a little bit better, and some of you have picked up information in dribs and drabs in the show over the years, but I'll do a quick rundown so y'all know a little bit more about me. And yeah, and sorry if this sounds awkward because I'm not really used to talking about myself like this, but hey, it's all good. So let me just start with the home cooking portion of it and why I'm so interested and why kind of, again, why I'm doing this podcast. So, you know, my mom was a pretty dang good cook, and I grew up eating, well, like Rena says, meat and potatoes and lots of other good stuff, you know, pretty much for every meal of my life. We were really lucky that way. We rarely went out to dinner. you know, and occasionally we'd have stuff that was kind of come from a box or whatever, just because, you know, I was six of six kids. So mom was pretty dang busy, you know, usually working full time and keeping the family running, right? But the cooking always struck me because that's, you know, we always came around the kitchen table for dinner, unless we were having a formal dinner in the dining table. But most of the time it was in the kitchen. And it was really the time for family, right? So the time we talked and the time we laughed the most and loved the food we were eating. And my dad often grew vegetables in the gardens, right? So we'd have fresh veggies. And in the times that my mom wasn't cooking, you know, perhaps my dad was grilling something or smoking something or pickling something. So there was always this real emphasis on food. And then there was always this kind of interesting idea that because my mom's side of the family are Germans from Russia, which is in kind of a specific ethnic group, many of whom, when they emigrated from Russia, ended up sort of in the Dakotas. They have some interesting food ways and recipes and traditions. So there was always something a little bit mysterious and interesting about that as well that kind of added to all of this, right? And then on top of that, for most of the time I've been able to remember, my mom has worked in food service either as, you know, an employee or a manager or an owner of restaurants and eateries. And in fact, during my junior high and early high school years, my mom and my sister co-owned a diner in the town in Toledo, Oregon, the town I grew up in. It's called Muggsy's, kind of a little, I would say like a little greasy spoon diner. And, you know, I'd wash dishes and clean and sometimes take orders and sometimes make milkshakes. And although it was hard work, certainly for my mom and my sister and everyone else who worked there, not so much for me, I was pretty young. It was, you know, it was just part of that food identity that I guess our family had. And it just, again, contributed to all of that. So, you know, I've cooked ever since I can remember, at least certainly since I left home. And even to this day, my family, and I've talked about the cooking challenges we host every year where we pick a theme and we have a cook-off among family members. So that's just another aspect where this food kind of identity of our family is sort of stuck with us. So that's why I love cooking. I think it's so interesting, even how Nick said in his earlier point about the meal kit delivery services. You know, some folks who grew up with that might have a different perspective than folks who never did. And I'm just hoping that through this show that the folks who grew up with it can find something to relate to, and the folks who didn't can find something to grow into and maybe create for themselves and their family and friends. So that's kind of why the home cooking. So all that being said, I am not a professional chef. I'm just somebody who's been cooking for a long time. And I like to cook and I like to talk about it and I like to share and teach. And hopefully that comes through in the show. But yeah, I'm not a chef. I don't work in the industry. And aside from that stint in Muggsy's, in the little diner in the town I grew up in, I've not worked professionally in food service ever. As for how I grew my knowledge, so many different ways, and there's still so much that I need to learn. You know, you just by doing, by talking to other people, by watching other people cook, by cooking with other people, taking lessons, reading books, watching shows, reading blogs, all of that stuff. But for me, what sticks the most is actually doing it. I can watch a show or listen to a podcast or read a blog post about a cooking technique, but unless I do it, you know, I'll never remember it and it won't stick with me. So growing the knowledge portion is just doing, trying things and seeing what works. And, yeah, as far as what I do now, I still live in Oregon. I've lived in Oregon all my life. I've traveled to many different places, but I've always kind of come back to Oregon as the place that I love to live. And I wouldn't want to move away from. I live in the Willamette Valley in Salem, Oregon, capital city. I'm married. I have an adopted son, Alex, who is just turned 8 this January. He's Ethiopian, and he's lived with us since 2013 when he was 1 year old. So he actually came home with us just a couple of days after his first birthday. So that's who I do the cooking for, mostly my wife and my son. And my wife has been on the show a couple of times. Her name's Tracy, and she may be on the show again in the future. We're trying to figure out how to do that. So I'm sure you'll hear from her if you haven't already listened to those old episodes with her. And as far as what I do, I have a very varied background. I've done a lot of different things. And that's a good thing and a bad thing. But, you know, I went to college for anthropology and archaeology. And that's actually, I did archaeology as a field technician, a field archaeologist for a couple of years out of college. And while I still love that field and I still find it fascinating, I got out of that profession and did various things. I worked for telecommunication companies. I worked in retail. I worked for General Electric for about 10 years as a project leader. I worked at Oregon State University in the College of Business for several years as a program manager. And right now I'll do the game show thing where people say, like, they don't say the name of where they work, but I work for a national company that provides internet services and application development and things like that for state governments. Yeah, so that's what I do for my day job. In between my day job and my family, you know, life is full. So I feel blessed, I guess, that I have any time at all I can work on this podcast and connect with all you awesome people. And it really does mean a lot to me. I mean, when I started this show in 2014, I don't think I actually even imagined I'd be interacting with anybody, if that sounds strange, but it's hard to fathom until it actually happens. And now I get to interact with cool folks all the time. And yeah, I'm very grateful for that. So Arena, thank you very much for your question. And I know other people have asked the same question, and it was time for me to share a little bit more. I don't know if that answers what people want to know, but if you have other questions about me, you know, let me know, and I'll certainly answer them if I can. All right, everybody. That's going to do it for the Smorgasbord January 2020 episode. Thank you so much for listening. I'm going to try to get a live cooking Let's Cook episode out this month before I'm out of time as well. And then, of course, as I mentioned, I'm going to be visiting some pasta and maybe even some wine in February, because it, after all, it is Valentine's Day month, and you know, wine seems like an appropriate topic. Anyway, once again, show notes for this episode, kitchencounterpodcast.com/150, feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com if you want to email me any questions. And then if you're interested in the Facebook group, head over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/group and ask to join, answer a couple of questions, and we'll let you in. And you can start engaging everybody. It's really a fun group. No spam, but nothing but love, good food, advice and tips and things like that. All right, everybody. Thank you so much once again for listening to this episode of the show. I'll be back with you again very soon. But until then, I just want to say thank you. Happy cooking. And until next time, I'm Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast.